Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Our guest this evening is Noreen Giletz from Gourmania.com. Noreen Giletz is a leading author of kosher textbooks in Canada, and she's the face behind Gourmania.com. She published her first book in 1968 and has just republished one of her classic works as the New Food Processor Bible 30th Anniversary Edition. Good evening, Noreen.
Oh, hi, Chaim. So nice to be on your show.
It's a pleasure to
have
you here.
Thank you for having. Oh, my pleasure to be with you.
Yeah. Ms. Giletz has written quite a few cookbooks. Quite a few of them on specific diets, like the low iodine diet, PCOS diet cookbook, the frequent fiber cookbook, healthy helpings, and so on. The first book she ever published was Second Helpings, as I said, in 1968. What I happen to like about her site, Gourmania, is that she doesn't just give you the recipe, but she also gives you a nutrient analysis of the recipes of food manufacturers and restaurants and so on. It is a very interesting site. It is very different from most of the sites, certainly different from most of the foodie bloggers around. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is that pushes you on? What it is that makes you write so passionately about food?
Well, it's very interesting. People can't figure out what there is to talk about, but for me, basically, my world revolves around food, Chaim. I find food fascinating. I have since I've been a little girl. I love to talk to people about it. It's a wonderful way to connect to other people because everybody eats. Not everybody cooks, but everybody eats. So it's a very good way to communicate. And because people know my recipes, we get into good discussions. I love people. I love food. So it works for me. And I'm curious to know how things work and how to create things that taste good. I'm not a fancy cook. I'm a really good basic cook, and my recipes make sense. They're written for what my readers need, and that's basically, I think, the secret to my success, is I listen to my readers.
Did you train as a professional chef, or this is something that just came natural, something that was in the blood?
I trained at my mother's kitchen at her knee when I could barely reach the top of the table. I was probably 3 or 4, and I was fascinated. She used to pull strudel dough, and I would watch her, and a little piece of dough would cover the whole table, and I was so intrigued, and I would watch her take the eyelach out of the chicken, the little tiny eggs, and just how she would fill pieces of dough with just simple ingredients. Everything just tasted so good. And I took some training when I was an adult. I did take some classes with Jacques Pépin. I spent a week with him, and that was phenomenal. He never looked at a clock. He just cooked. He was totally inspiring. Everybody else was sitting in the sun. I went to Florida and sat in cooking classes. Well, it was warm. It was warm in the kitchen. It was fine.
Okay. That's so precious. For example, your book on the food processor, the one that you have currently rewritten, the Food Processor Bible.
That's the second time I've rewritten it. Actually, that's the third. This is the third edition.
Oh, this is the third edition. Mm-hmm.
This is the third edition. It was written maybe it's the fourth. It was written originally in 1979, 1980. I revised it in 2002, I'm so sorry. I've been fighting a cold for about 3 weeks. And then I redid it for the new generation of food processors because they're so different today, and the new generation of cooks. Now it's the children and the grandchildren of my original readers who are cooking from my books, which is fabulous, actually, when you think about it. So I have communication with a whole new generation.
Very good. So now let me ask you one question. When you decide to write a specific cookbook, okay, like, for example, the food processor, why of all things the food processor?
Well,
the same goes about all your other titles. Why specific titles? Your books seem unusual, and I guess they do fill the void, but what inspired you to go with something different, out of the ordinary?
Originally, I wrote the food processor book because when I had written a half a book. I had done a book called Second Helpings, Please, and people said to me, you know, you should write a book on your own. I had done that with a group of people as a fundraising project for the old it was called B'nai B'rith Women. They've changed names since. They became Jewish Women International. Now it's Act Against Violence. It's a different organization, but still a focus of helping people. So I had gone on to do this cookbook and decided to write a book on my own. I wrote a half a cookbook, and then I saw a food processor in action. And I said, oh, my gosh, I can't believe anything can be so amazing. So these revolving blades literally revolutionized the book that I was writing, the way I cooked, made everything so quick. I mean, seconds. I can make like a pastry dough in 20 seconds. I could grind meat for Kreplach, like in 15, 20 seconds. Everything was like moments. And so I said, you know, people need to know about this, and nobody knew how to use their machine. So I wrote a book on it, and I taught a lot of classes over the years. I teach as well. So I know what my students need. I listen to people. I know what the questions are. So when I write very clearly. I write very visually because actually people don't really realize it. I'm actually somewhat dyslexic, so I need to write very clear instructions that have to make a visual image because otherwise I can't figure them out either.
When you teach a class, do you follow a certain theme, like, for example, Levana does? For example, tonight her theme is Secrets of Whole Grain, Quick Breads and Muffins. Do you follow a theme in that sense, a specific type of cooking, or is your emphasis different?
It varies. It depends on the group, depends on the students, whatever the need is. I may do a fundraising group where they want to have a menu that might be healthy Passover cooking or Passover without panic or food fast, not fast food. A group may want to learn about chicken or somebody doesn't know about fish. I've done private classes as well where I've gone to people's homes and I will teach in their kitchen. That's obviously more costly for an individual, but then they get to work with their own, you know, with their own appliances in their own workspace. So it's always different. I've taught as few as 1 to 2 people and as many as 350. It doesn't matter. It's just a sharing of information. Yeah. It's fun.
So you've been doing this for almost
a long
time.
I'm a bubby, so I'm 71 and I'm still cooking and I'm still doing
it.
Pardon me? Oh, man.
That may have a thing till 120.
I heard you. I'm sorry. I think my ears aren't so good either. Yeah. So, anyways, lately I've been drinking lots of soup, I can tell you.
Oi.
No,
so
I love
how do you go about? How do you go about developing a new recipe or adapting an old favorite?
It depends which it is. I'll give you an example. Today, I had chicken. I had been out on the weekend, so I had bought, when I went shopping the other day, I bought beautiful the little Meyer lemons, and they were a good price. I took them. I cut them in half. I put them inside, some inside the chicken, put some of the juice on around the chicken. I thought, I have a cold. Maybe a little honey will help. So, you know, lemon and honey is supposed to make everything better. So I put honey and lemon on it, a little bit of basil, a little paprika for color, seasoned it up with some nice freshly ground Himalayan sea salt, some pepper. But if I didn't have Himalayan sea salt, it could be salt from the salt shaker. I can tell you that for sure. It's what I've got is what you get. And I thought, okay, I'll put some little potatoes around. I didn't have a lot of time. I was working today. And so let's just make it, you know, quick and simple. There's little baby carrots in the fridge. We'll throw them in, put everything in the oven, and everything roasted together. So it just depends on what I have in the house, what my mood is, something that I may have seen at the drugstore, something I may have seen on the food channel, in a food magazine, in a cookbook that I flipped through. There's not that much that I haven't seen. But every cook has their own twist. And so I like very comfortable foods and comforting foods. I like to make things that I know how. When I create a recipe, I write everything down. I make sure that somebody can follow exactly. I might wake up in the middle of the night and I've figured out how to make something work. And I get very excited. So it's always different.
Let me ask you another question. As I said recently in one of my reviews about a cookbook that came out, a friend of mine, a chef at a major restaurant in Manhattan, once told me that when he got out of the Culinary Institute of America, he was so full of himself about everything that he had learned that he would figure out how to make the most delicious dishes using the maximum amount, the largest possible amount of ingredients, until he figured out that that would never fly in a restaurant, until he figured out that, first of all, not only was it taking a lot of time, not only was it becoming extremely expensive, but there was also no need for it. How would you compare yourself to that type of attitude, which this particular chef outgrew very, very fast?
Did you ever consider
yourself a virtuoso that had to use a lot of ingredients, or did you consider yourself rather somebody who was very practical and always used the minimum easiest, the minimum amount of ingredients, the easiest way to create a delicious dish?
It's not always the minimum of ingredients. It's just what works to get really good taste. Taste rules. If it doesn't taste good, I don't care how healthy it is. I don't care how pretty it is. So I look for ingredients that work together. And you know what? My mother used to say, first you take an onion. And except if you're making chocolate cake, I think it would work very well. But onion and garlic and a little bit of oil to sauté vegetables. Simple ingredients. You don't need a lot of fancy ingredients, but you need to have a balance of flavor. So if you have sweet, you might need a little bit of sour to go with it, or a little acid to go with it. You might need a little bit of heat to go with it. And it's very hard to explain. It's kind of a Kishka feeling. I just know. I said, this is just what it needs. And so I don't think you have to have a lot of ingredients. I think you have to have what works, and it should look good, and it should taste good.
Okay. Now, have you ever done any recipe development for other than your cookbooks?
I sure have. Yes, I have. I've done a lot of work actually for Splenda. I've done recipe development for them. I created a recipe for an oatmeal that it was actually better for a food manufacturer, that they had a kosher product and they wanted something have a certain hechsher on it, and the product I developed was actually better than what Quaker uses. Without a lot of additives, it was very natural, plain simple, had good shelf life, everything was good, and it was had a perfect nutritional profile, because I understand how also to use a nutrition program properly. So I knew how to build what I needed, but still, the taste had to be within certain guidelines. It had to taste good. If it doesn't taste good, forget it. Mine was better than Quaker's.
Very good. When did you first discover a passion for cooking, or at least the liking?
When did I first discover which?
A passion, or at least a liking for cooking.
Oh, for cooking, when I was little. I think I used to love to take sugar, put it in a frying pan, and melt it down, and I would make, like, it would melt. And then I'd add peanuts to it, and I made peanut brittle, and it was magical to see how sugar turned into liquid. I remember making, I guess it was brownies, and I forgot the eggs on the counter when I cleaned up. I think I was about 9. And I had something that was hard like a rock, and I said, look at this, I developed my own first recipe. You know, I made something up, and because I had left out the eggs, and it was hard like candy. And then I said, well, let me try making icing, putting icing on it. My mother didn't have icing sugar in the house. She wouldn't buy that. So I took flour and sugar together. That did not work. Flour and sugar do not make icing sugar. So I started experimenting, you know, really quite young, trying to figure out how to do things if you didn't have certain ingredients. We had very basic ingredients in our house. My mother used to say, I don't have a lot of prepared foods in this. I have ingredients, and with ingredients I can make whatever I want. And my children used to look and say, but Bubby, you don't have like this kind of biscuit, or you don't have that kind of cookie. She says, if I want it, I can make it. And so I was brought up, that you could take yeast and a little bit of sugar and some flour and a little bit of either butter or oil or margarine, and you could make beautiful yeast dough, and you could make cinnamon buns, and you could make coffee cakes from just flour, sugar, eggs, and a little bit of butter, or coffee cake, or lots of cookies. And there was always homemade, you know, baking in our house. My mother never believed in going to a bakery. You would buy it. You would buy ingredients. You wouldn't buy the baked goods. As a matter of fact, it's funny because I remember my baba came over with a piece of honey cake one time. And she said, "Why is a Zoi tire? It's so expensive." My mother said, "Sure, look how much it weighs. A little piece is heavy like lead. Look at my honey cake. It's light like a feather." My mother was a wonderful baker and a wonderful cook, and she really inspired me. Actually, my processor book is dedicated to her. She passed away exactly a year ago, and I finished the book as I was sitting outside of her room just her last night that she was here. Last night that we were sitting and we were writing, we put the manuscript together, and we sat with her. And my book went to the publisher, and my mother went to her final resting place all together. It was like very traumatic. So it's very interesting that the book and my mother sort of finished together. You know, but her memory lives on through what I do. She taught me well.
Well, and based on what I hear from you, her memory lives on by the fact that you are a wonderful cook. I've seen some of your cookbooks. I've seen some of your recipes on your site. And
thank you.
It's very inspiring. You don't make anything ultra complicated. It seems very, very common sense.
It's interesting. I don't like complicated things. I can make a tomato rose. I can make a beautiful like a flower from a lemon or a lemon twist. I know how to make some things. I can make a flower from an onion. You know, I can make curled celery. Very, very simple. I don't use a lot of, fuss and bother. I make sure there's a lot good color. I'll put a little fresh herbs on top, or a little touch of color, or a couple of basil leaves with a little baby tomato rose, and it looks pretty. You don't need a lot of fuss and pomp and circumstance. Some people like to do that, and the food sometimes doesn't taste so good. My food always tastes good. pretty well, except for sometimes I get mixed up. And a few weeks ago, I had company for dinner, and I'm still not used to my stove. And the burner that I thought was on high was on low, and the burner that I thought that was on low was on high. So that wasn't such a good result. It happens, but it happens to everybody. You know what? Even I make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes.
Of course.
And it's still better than bought.
Do you have any funny stories or any interesting stories that happened in relation with your cooking, whether it was trying to teach a class, whether it was giving a demo in somebody's house, or just
I'll tell you, years ago I taught a cooking class. Took a quiche out of the oven. It was gorgeous, beautiful pastry that I made in the food processor. Beautiful filling. I mean, it was like a picture. And we lifted it out of the the tart pan. So it was one of these ones that it just, you lift it up from underneath and it came off the form. And somehow or another, it ended up upside down on the floor. And I said, we can't eat that.
Oh.
And they said, oh, yes, we can. It wasn't on the floor very long. They ate it. They didn't care if it was on the floor or not. So
wow.
It was really interesting. I didn't think it was quite the right thing to do, but they ate it. It disappeared. I once did a cheesecake, and there was somebody else's recipe, had a lot of sour cream in it, and they didn't have any instructions whether it would freeze or not. Oh, I know. I think it was left over from a cake from a cooking class. We had so many that we had frozen it. And I chucked the cake out of the pan. And I unmolded, I did the springform mold, and the cake literally started going in different directions. Half went to the left, half went to the right, and it started to walk all over the counter. It just separated because of the sour cream in it. So it happens, you know, and then you say, so I learned something. It's basically, Jacques Pepin taught us, cooking is the art of recovery. When you make a mistake, you have to know how to repair it, fix it,
yeah.
Transform it into something else. Where do you think trifle came from? Trifle is the cake that fell apart, and then nobody could do anything with it. So you cut it up in pieces, and you put a little bit of custard or pudding in it and some whipped cream and some fruit, and you've got another dessert, and it looks wonderful, and you charge double the price.
As you said, cooking is the art of recovery. I remember years ago, shortly after I got married, we were living in Arizona. It was in the middle of the summer, extremely hot. And one of the usual dishes that you serve when it's very, very hot in Israel, in Tel Aviv, is something like sour cream and strawberries with some sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, my wife at the time made a mistake, and instead of putting in sugar, she put in salt.
Oh, it's happened to many a chef.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it was also a few minutes before our company was coming. There was no time to run down and get more stuff. So what do we do? So genius here, meaning the idiot who's talking right now, me, suggests, how about if we double the amount of sugar? As you can imagine, that was even worse because as people were eating it, you could almost hear the grinding of the teeth between the sugar and the salt.
I'm sure. That's funny. Years ago, I remember making whipping cream for one of the very first times, and I didn't know that whipping cream had to be very cold to whip it. Egg whites should be at room temperature, but whipping cream should be cold. And so the whipping cream, my mother said to me, you have to beat it, whatever you're making, you have to beat it very, very, very well. So the whipping cream is beating and it's beating, and all of a sudden I hear slosh, 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 slosh. And what I ended up is I had butter and the whey separated out, the milk.
Ouch.
So now I know how to make butter. Anyways, I ran to the store and I bought more. Thank goodness, you know, the grocery store was open and we managed. But it happens. You know what? It's a learning experience.
Absolutely.
And it's a story. And it's a story to tell for future, you know, for future generations.
Absolutely. And
I also believe.
It sounds very funny.
Yeah, I also believe in cooking with your children. I think it's very important to pass it on to the next generation, Chaim.
Absolutely. For example, my oldest daughter, who now is the proud mother of 11 in Providence, 1 year for Shavuot, we had people coming over, and my wife suddenly took sick.
Oh, my.
These people were coming in from out of town. We couldn't call them to cancel.
Right.
So my oldest daughter, who at the time was 8, cooked for 15 people. And she did
really?
A fantastic job.
Wow.
I can't say that she was very happy when she found out that she was the cook, but she did an incredible job.
But she knew how to do it. It's very interesting.
She knew how to do it. She had watched her mother enough. She had watched me. And you know how to do it.
How did you become so interested in cooking?
Well, I became interested first in writing about food.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I first got married, we used to celebrate our weekly anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a little bit too expensive, especially since both of us were students at Bar-Ilan University in Ramat Gan.
Okay.
Then we decided, okay, once a week is a bit expensive, let's make it once a month. That was also getting expensive. Mm-hmm. And asking mommy and daddy on both sides to send us money so we can continue going out once a month did not look like a very good idea. In fact, we were almost sure that we would know what the answer is before we even got the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So luckily, the Jerusalem Post every 3 years used to change their food writer. No, when they advertise it, I figure they have nothing to lose. If I get the job, great. If I don't get the job, I'm no worse off than now. We figure out what we do next. All right, I applied for the job, and luckily I got it. I had read up some articles, so I know all the buzzwords. So the first guy who interviews me was impressed, and then he passes me on to the publisher. The publisher says to me after a while, okay, so you know all the buzzwords. Now tell me what's your experience. Now I have a problem. I was a 21-year-old boy. I'd gone to yeshiva all my life. Now I was going to Bar-Ilan University. What experience? But I figured if I came this far, I'm not living without, at least some sort of difference. So I look him straight in the eye and I said, I've been eating all my life. So the guy cracks up. And David says to me, okay, I give you an assignment. If you do it right, you get the job. If you don't do it right, should you ever cross my path, I'll shoot to kill. Well, I got the job. I'm still here.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's a wonderful story. I find men are wonderful cooks because women, particularly in my generation, they felt they had to follow the rules. Men don't follow rules. Men will adapt differently. They just function in a different way. Not all men and not all women. I mean, everybody cooks differently. Everybody bakes differently. I also find that not everybody who can cook can bake, and not everybody who can bake can cook. I'm blessed. I can do both. Yeah.
Right.
And I understand. Like cooking is more creative, where baking is more of a chemistry. There's a creative area to it as well.
Right. At the NYU, at the New York University, they have a cooking lab, which is affiliated with the chemistry department.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a lot of creative cooking, and they bring in chefs from all over the country, sometimes all the way from Europe and other countries within the continent, where they discuss the different techniques. But it is mostly approached, as you said, from a point of view of chemistry.
Mm-hmm. It is chemistry. Did I tell you that I met Julia Child? I have her autograph. I met her a number of years ago at a food conference, and she said to me, and what is your specialty? And I said, I do kosher cooking, and I wrote a book about the food processor. Would you give me your autograph? And she said, oh, most certainly. And so she wrote in it, Viva la Kosher Cuisine. And I still have it. I treasured it. She was
what
an
type of a person
woman.
Was she in real life? Is she,
oh,
was
wonderful.
She like she was portrayed in the movie Julie and Julia?
Yes, very much like that. She was warm and wonderful, actually very, very funny, passionate about food. I had called her. I had asked if she would give a quote for the back cover of my of the previous edition of my food processor book. And she
mm-hmm.
said, oh, my dear, she said, I'm going into a retirement residence, and I won't have a kitchen there, and I won't be able to test all the recipes. I'm so, so sorry. She said, well, what if you called Joan Nathan? Maybe she could do it. She had a half-hour conversation with me, asked me all about cooking in Canada, about my experience. She was warm, and she was wonderful. She was interested and interesting, very tall. Extremely, extremely tall. Her husband was about half a head shorter than her, and and her sister was taller, even taller than she was. Her sister had to be at least 6'4". She was very tall.
That's unusual for a woman.
Yeah, very tall for a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. A fascinating person. Yeah, she was probably one. Meeting her was probably one of the biggest highlights in my life.
What other famous cooks, chefs did you meet?
I met Sarah Moulton. To me, she's famous. She was the executive chef of Gourmet magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the opportunity to interview her about a year ago. She came to my house. She was in Toronto, and I interviewed her here, and I have lovely pictures. And she also... She worked with Jacques Pepin and Julia Child. It was really interesting. And we had a whole discussion because I was at that point planning to redo my kitchen. I wanted to do a kitchen reno. And so I had looked at her kitchen, which was they have it on one of the websites. And I used a lot of the design that she had implemented in her own kitchen. So, well, and then, I put my own touch. I just did done a kitchen reno. It took about 2 months. And my kitchen, I've always written kosher, but my kitchen was not strictly kosher. I've just converted it over to a strictly kosher kitchen, and that was a challenge, you know, because, again, what you think you know, you don't always know. So, again, I like to learn. I find, knowledge is empowering.
Since you said that you converted your kitchen to a kosher kitchen, how do you mm-hmm. do some of the substitutions? Like, for example, French cooking, which is very, very much butter and meat and so on and so forth. How do you do that in the kosher kitchen?
Basically, I'll use a vegetable stock for a broth. That wines are not a problem. I would use a par of a margarine if I had to. I mostly work with oils versus using butter, but I don't do... I used to do a lot of French. I actually did do a lot of French because I lived in Montreal for many years. I just use lots of herbs, and I don't know. It depends on the dish. I usually manage it, but in all the years, even when my kitchen wasn't kosher, like I didn't buy strictly kosher everything, I still would never mix milk and meat. It didn't sit right with me. That wasn't how I grew up. I just hadn't bothered to have two sets of dishes. And then it was like a gradual process. I'm very happy that I did it. I find that it makes me understand my readers better, and so I understand more of the issues that they face. But I always knew how to answer questions and figure out how to do it. I just know. I can't even explain it. Just like a Kishka feeling. Just know.
And we're just about out of time. We want to thank Noreen Gilletz for being our guest this evening. And for all of you listeners out there, if you want to learn something about cooking, if you want to see some wonderful, wonderful recipes, please go to gourmania.com. Thank you very, very much. And we shall see you all this coming Wednesday when our guest, will be Jesse Blunder, the director of the Center for Kosher Culinary Arts, and Chef Avram Weissman, the dean of the Center for Kosher Culinary Arts. Good night, and thank you one and all. We shall see you this coming Wednesday at 8 o'clock on the same station, blacktalkradio.com/Gosha Singh. Thank you and good night. Good night,
Thank
Mrs.
you.
Gillen.
Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure. And we loved it. We're going to have you again, please.
My pleasure. You just call me and I'll be there. One day we'll cook together. Actually, you're lucky that you have Jesse and Avram because I know them both and they're inspiring.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
yes,
have a delicious evening.
It's what?
I said have a delicious evening.
Oh, thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good day, Avon.
Good night. Thank you.